Well, hi, this is Dave. Welcome to the Early Birds. I wanted to be sure that I was here when you signed on, but you beat me to the punch. Thank you for those of you who have sent the responses to the couple of questions. What's the most important question you want answered during this series? And secondly, if you were to walk away at the end of our four seminars saying it's one of the best ever and you got what you wanted, what would you walk away with? So for those of you who may not have seen my email yet, and before we officially start, any responses to those two questions? What would you most like us to focus on in this seminar series for you, for your writing? Any thoughts or responses to that? You'll notice that these are the same questions that you're familiar with for each coaching session as you develop a coaching story, a beginning, middle, and end in each session. The client determines the focus and the destination, and then you collaboratively proceed to successively approximate and create that with the client. Now, I know this is not a coaching session, but I wanted you to get an idea of the similarity of something like this. Any thoughts or response to why did you sign up for this thing? What do you want to get out of it? And I know you signed up for some reason because you're early. Any responses?
Hi, Dave. This is Carolyn Holtz.
Please, thanks. I was getting lonely there. Go ahead.
I know that feeling. I think for me, I really want to understand the key components to what makes a book successful. You know, how do you get people to pick it up or buy it on Amazon, and how you title it so that you grab a reader's attention? And then how do you go about publishing, marketing, and selling it? I mean, this is, for me,
okay,
it's an arena I know nothing about. It's not
okay,
a world I've ever entered.
Yeah, those are great questions. And you saw the four seminars are going to answer the four components of an answer to that: the art, the craft, the science, and the business of writing your initial story, of telling and selling your story. So the marketing is part of that, something you want to think about. That we'll cover that in the business part. And I first want to look at the art, about to create and how you go about creating something, especially that may be new and different, that is in some ways unprecedented. You don't have a model exactly for writing a book. So we're going to look at that, how to do that systematically, calling on all the things that you guys know very well from coaching, that if you want to create change, you don't just focus on the goal. Everybody has the same goal. Winners and losers have the same goal. You focus on the system. So we're going to look at that more so in the second seminar of the craft of writing. And the first, we're going to look at the art and the scope of things and get a feel for that and develop it in a system, develop our four seminar series in a systematic way so that you can apply some aspects of what we do to your writing in a systematic way. So thanks for that. And thank you for those of you who have sent in responses already by email to my earlier email to those two questions. I appreciate that. And that really helps me know what you're interested in. It kind of shapes some of what I discuss. And I'll stick mostly to the outline and use that as a guide, but I'm looking at the same outline as you are. I'd suggest printing that outline. It's an annotated outline. And looking at the workbook, and the workbook is divided into the same four components that we do this seminar series: art, craft, science, and business. So there are exercises and work tools that I think you'll find beneficial there. So what else would you like to add? For those of you who haven't responded, does anyone else have something you'd like to be sure we focus on or that you'd like to take away in this series?
Hi, Jane. My name is Dina. I actually just signed up for the seminar 2 hours ago.
Oh, okay.
So I have not received that first email to respond, so I'm coming in a little bit cold. For me, I like what you just said about the way to get to the changes through, you know, this consistent process or system, because I've been, air quoting, writing a book for about 3 years, and I have, I feel like, 1,000 great ideas to get started, and I'm really great at getting started, and then I get a rush of adrenaline, get a page or two written, and then it's gone. So it's that creative, the really kind of, what am I actually trying to say? Distilling that into one vision or one voice versus this sort of chaos.
Okay, great. That's super. And those are some excellent questions to frame the listening. Let me, I'll reference some people if I think it'd be helpful. A good buddy of mine, who is a best-selling author and multiple, all kinds of stuff. Someone asked him, so, how does this whole writing thing work? You sit down and write when the inspiration strikes? And my buddy, John David Mann, said, no, I sit down and write when the alarm clock goes off. And right now, he's at the earliest stage of work on some things that are really innovative for him. He sets his alarm clock for 5 o'clock every morning and starts writing. So that's a system, at least the beginning of a system. So anything else you want to input or add or ask before we start? Every seminar, I'll have a bit of time at the beginning for discussion, for questions, comments, thoughts, and then reserve just a bit of time at the end with an open mic for discussion and questions. In the middle, which is the majority, I will put us on lecture mode so that you don't have to worry about the background noise, and then we'll come back to discuss it. So, there's so much I want to convey to you in these 4 short hours that there's most of it will be a seminar type with lecture instead of participation and going back and forth, which is more my preference, but there's just so much information I want to convey to you. And if there's anything else that comes up, I'll send you a white paper or something else to supplement what we do. So anything else anyone would like to add or ask before we start officially? Okay, well, I'm gonna put us on lecture mode, and remember, we'll come back closer to the top of the hour and have a bit of discussion. So any questions or clarifications that you have, we'll deal with at that time. Okay, we're going to talk initially about the art of writing. So this is an important aspect just to get the scope of what you're going to be doing, to think about things in at least initially a broader perspective. The preparation is your backstory. It's been said that just about every smart, sensitive person has a desire to write a book, because writing can be a natural way for someone to learn, to express, to integrate, feel really alive. When I'm asked what I'm going to write about, whether it's a blog, a white paper, a book, my answer always is what I most want to learn, what I next want to learn. So more than 80% of adults in America say they want to publish, but just over 1% actually do. And that includes articles, editorials, blogs, not just books. So first decide if you have a message or a blog series or an article or a white paper or a book. A message is a written or spoken communication of an idea and point of view. An article can convey a message. A series of blog posts can succinctly spread even a complex message. But a nonfiction book builds a case, develops and illustrates a theme. The book needs a story to hold its richness of information and story development. It carries the reader along in its course of reason, illustrating applications and bringing it to life. Ideally, it engages the reader from the first sentence. The story evolves a position and argument with complexity and depth. The irony of Seth Godin, who, as you probably know, is one of the best-known marketers in the world, points out, the market demands that you summarize your book in a blog post. Traditional advice has been to advise or to write about what you know. Here's another more exciting and creative possibility from my perspective. Write to see what you have to say. Write about what you most want or need to learn. Now, here's an illustration of that. At a conference many years ago, when I was still practicing psychoanalysis, so that was a while back, I was talking with a buddy who I knew was an excellent clinician. We discussed the paper that was just presented, and I asked when he was going to write a paper and present it. He said, well, I'm going to wait until I'm sure I have something to say. I knew at that moment that he would never present a paper at that or any other conference, and he never did. Those of you who have trained or mentored with me know that not knowing anything has never stopped me from talking. So we're going to discuss how to write in a systematic, structured way for effective and successful results. We'll talk specifically about what happens next when you schedule an appointment with yourself to write. We'll discuss the art, the craft, the science, the business of authoring your first book. In short, how to tell and sell your story. So first, think about commitment. A prerequisite is a commitment and a game plan. First, make sure your commitment and your game plan match. You know the words of somebody who's not really totally committed to something. I need to, I'll try, I should, I ought to. These are the words of someone who is committed. I will. And you guys know that from coaching and know that at the end of each coaching session, you ask the client for their commitment about what they will do before you meet again. One of the great philosophers of the 20th century said, you know this quote, try not, do or do not. There is no try. And that was, of course, Yoda. And think about the difference between a 99% commitment and a 100% commitment. Here's the Texas version of that. A fish has no use for a lake that has water 99% of the time. USA Today did a study on individuals who made New Year's resolutions. They found two groups, those who made a resolution and wrote it down, and those who made one but neglected to write it down. Those who did not put their goal in writing, 4% kept the resolution. Those who did write it down, 44% kept it. It put it in an output channel. They made a commitment that was then part of how they saw themselves, tantamount to their identity to follow through on that. So when you write down a commitment, it can produce a tenfold difference in follow through. So write down your commitment to complete your book. Neuroscience teaches us that the brain works like a travel agent. The first two questions, remember back in the day before the internet, the first two questions a travel agent asks, where do you want to go? When do you want to get there? Program your brain to complete the book by a chosen date. At least you have a map that way. How much do you really want to tell and sell your story? One unknown author had a collection of heartwarming stories that he thought would make a pretty good book. He had never published before, he shopped his idea to every publisher he could find. No success. He shopped it to 141 publishers in all, was rejected by everyone. But he believed in his book. And he was repeatedly told, though, that it wouldn't appeal to audiences. Well, he decided to publish it himself, began selling it out of the back of his car. It had a really unlikely title, Chicken Soup for the Soul. I personally heard Jack Canfield tell this story and have read it since. At last count, he's sold over $1 billion worth of books. Let's look at a vision. How do you write a book? Consider a related question. Now, a couple of you have done this exercise with me before. How do you find a yellow Jeep? Here's a story I want to offer you. A group of executives asked me to present a seminar to them on writing a first book. The first thing I asked when I got to the podium was, have any of you in the last month seen a yellow Jeep? After they looked at me and thought maybe I was in the wrong room, there were 24 people. One person raised his hand. Then I took them through a visualization. Let's do it now. Close your eyes and relax. Be very aware of relaxing your body and your seat, how firmly it's holding you. As you close your eyes, wipe out any thoughts and focus just on your breathing. Breathe in relaxation and breathe out any tension. Another breath in of relaxation, breathing out any tension. Now, with your eyes closed, picture a yellow Jeep. As you walk up to that Jeep, notice the detail, the paint, the tires. As you walk around behind it, notice the bumpers and the trim. As you walk around the side, notice everything about it, the tires. As you walk in the front, notice the grille, the headlights, look into the windshield. As you walk around to the driver's door and reach out and open it, notice how cool and firm the handle is. As you sit in the seat, be aware of how firmly it holds you. Notice the smell. Notice what it's like to grip the wheel and look through the windshield. Now, turn the motor on and be aware of the sound, of the vibration. Notice the smell in the Jeep. As you grip the wheel, imagine driving that Jeep. Now, as you turn it off and get out, notice the firm sound of the door closing. As you walk away, turn around one more time and look at that yellow Jeep in its entirety. Now, I ask this group of 24 people, if anyone happened to see a yellow Jeep in the next week, would they let me know? In the first 3 days, 22 of the 24 people let me know they saw a yellow Jeep. Now, what happened? The number of yellow Jeeps in the greater Houston area didn't suddenly increase like that, but they cued their radar to recognize and notice when they saw a yellow Jeep. It was no longer one of the millions of things that were just stimuli that they didn't really take in. So having a picture of something and revisiting that picture, a visualization, does the same thing in your brain as having an actual vision through the optic nerve. Your brain can't tell the difference. If you repeat it regularly, like at the beginning and the end of every day, you actually can etch that as a future memory. You actually rewire your brain. So this is something you may want to think about if you have a question about, if you don't know if you can or not. Picture arriving. Picture the success of doing that. There's an exercise, I think, or a section in the workbook about the new art. The new science and the old art of a vision. It's about systematically how to go about creating a visualization and how to revise your mind software with affirmations. The vision rewires your brain. The software, the affirmations, revise the software for that. So once you can see yourself actually completing your book, all sorts of things begin to happen. You've already coded your radar for writing your book, including listening right now. So we'll discuss how to evolve that vision. So here's an exercise about active choice. As we know from coaching, we focus on the choice architecture of this moment, how we actively create whatever we think and feel and experience, we create at this moment. So do this exercise with me. It's going to feel a little goofy, but you can do it because, remember, you're on lecture mode. I'd like you to say two things out loud that you can't do. For example, I can't finish this article I'm writing. I can't get the clutter out of my office. Two things that you feel you can't do. Now, for each of those two things, restate each, but substitute won't for can't. I won't finish this article I'm writing. I won't get the clutter out of my office. And say both out loud, substituting won't. Now, say this sentence out loud three times. And I've actually done this, not a bunch, but two or three clients. I've actually had them say this sentence out loud about something. I am always free to change my mind. Say it yourself out loud three times. I'm always free to change my mind. Now you're aware of choice. All you have to do is the next right thing. Once you begin thinking about your specific book, you begin to hear things in different ways. You begin to hear examples. You begin to think about stories. Incidents become vignettes. Ideas begin to crystallize. You think about what you want to say and become aware of how you even want to say it. You become a better listener, which makes you a better speaker. Now, a caveat here. No one ever sits down to write a book. You sit down to write a few sentences or a page. Mozart never sat down to write an opera. He had a medley in his head and let it speak to him until the story of the music finally emerged, bit by bit, day by day. Now, the most important thing about a goal is having one. The most important thing about a plan is to stick with it, to have a system. If you really want to change, focus on the system, not just the goal. Wisdom is to know the right path. Integrity is to take it. A clearly defined goal can capture imagination and inspire your passion. It can cut through the fog like a beacon in the night. One extra degree of effort in business and in life can separate the good from the great. 51 publishers turned down Richard Bach's Jonathan Livingston Seagull. He took it to number 52. At 211 degrees, water's hot, one more degree, it boils. To get what you've never had, you'll probably have to do what you've never done. Lord Eliot put this in a very succinct way a very long time ago. Perseverance is not a long race. It's many short races, one after the other. So here are some guiding questions to clarify as you start writing. What do you want to write? What do you want to gain? These are all in the outline, as well as in the exercises. Who do you want to reach? So here are some reflections to begin your first book, even before you began your first chapter. There are six or seven. Write for a specific preferred audience. In coaching, you know what that's like with a niche. You want everybody to read it. Remember how in the beginning you wanted to coach everybody about anything, and it felt like an amputation to narrow it down until it paid off. That's the way I experience editing now. It's like an amputation. Envision your audience. Perhaps even create a persona for the two or three prototypes of those people you'll write for. Speak directly to them. This is how I write when I'm doing a blog, a white paper, a book. I have a little digital dictation device, and I'm talking to somebody. I'm talking to a group. And that way it's not as convoluted as when I write it down or try to type it. So I'm talking to someone, and that's my sweet spot. Each of you will have your own sweet spot. So really recognize that and do what really fits. Next, write a focused, compelling, understandable, and enjoyable conversation. That's what you're having with a reader. You're having a conversation. What's your aha, your good news? You need to have a focus of what is it that you're really conveying that's new or different or exciting that's organizing what you're saying. What will your book do uniquely well, better than any other book around? Maybe reach out for opinion molders and feedback like focus groups. And lastly, an initial step to create your book is to fully accept the reality of the process of writing to evolve your identity as an author. Now, here's a personal experience, if it's helpful. It was pivotal to me. I was writing the first book I had done other than a professional book as a psychiatrist, psychoanalyst, clinical professor of psychiatry. So it was really different for me to write a personal book, especially as a psychoanalyst, because you're not supposed to, you know, let people see your personal side for all the reasons that psychoanalysts think they need to be an opaque screen or a mirror. But I wanted to write about my experiences of parenting. I was writing Making Memories, Reflections on Parenting, the Heart of a Father and the Mind of a Psychoanalyst. Well, I went to the Iowa Summer Writers Workshop and shared with my group my dilemma, and I was still practicing analysis at the time. I wanted to write from my heart, needing to use examples from my experiences as a parent, but I didn't want to burden my present and future analytic patients knowing too much about me if it would derail what they needed to do. And remember, at that time especially, psychoanalysts think they have to remain anonymous to be a blank screen onto which the patient projects himself or herself. I'm a coach now, and I can tell you some very different ways of thinking about it. So I got some immediate helpful feedback. When you're writing, and this is from the group, and they had unanimous agreement, when you're writing, you're not an analyst, you're not a father, you're an author. Therefore, write as your subtitle says, from your heart and your mind. Next, you're thinking and feeling a book into existence. Then you'll craft it into a powerful message with a memorable story. What you imagine guides what you do, and you learn what your book is about by thinking and writing it. And lastly, you get your book done well by willing yourself to plan, organize, think, revise, and tolerate confusion and uncertainty. The principle is do whatever it takes. Here's an exercise that you might consider at this point. Schedule a brainstorming session with yourself to do this exercise. And I mention this now because it's important for an author to identify and address any obstacles that might stand in the way of what you want to do. Examples include interfering self-talk, writer's block, anxiety about the unknown, feeling like you don't know enough, worrying about inexperience, concern about not having anything to say, all of those. So for your brainstorming session with yourself, get grounded and centered and have one sheet of paper. Make three vertical lines so you have four columns. The first column, emotional triggers. These are prompts or emotional triggers that may set you into a cycle of rumination, negativity, or stuckness. For example, well, I've never written a book before, so I may not know how to do it. It's too much. I don't even know where to start. Now, title the second column, usual behavior. So you have emotional trigger and usual behavior. The second column, write your usual response to each of these triggers. For example, if the trigger is, I've never written a book before, that may impel you to continue your research rather than actively writing, instead of evoking procrastination. So write down what your usual response is. If it's procrastination, write that down. In the third column, this is where you get grounded and centered and do a mantra, focus, a cue of focus and physiology. And we don't have time for it, but there's a 30-minute free webinar on the homepage of my website, Mentor Path, the very bottom link called Master States of Mind. And it really talks about, I talk there about these four columns and how I crafted them initially. And it might be helpful to look at the importance of regulating state of mind. I think it'll be beneficial for your clients, but we're talking about doing a book here. So about getting grounded and centered and creating a plan. Now, the fourth column is your ideal response. This is the specific adaptive behavior you want. It's an alternative to the usual behavior that's in a time capsule. So I don't think I can do it. I've never done it before. I don't have it. Here, in the fourth column, you write the behavior that you will engage for each initial thought or trigger that would have stopped you before. Make sure it's behavioral. It's not outcome. It's not theory. But it's something specifically to do. In that moment, you can only engage in behavior. It's not an abstract goal. So let's rename columns 1 and 2, old story, and columns 3 and 4, new story. The idea is to quickly cue your radar to a way that you can focus and engage what you want, to create a mindset that you can engage what you want and be creative. So instead of reprogramming new behavior, remember, neuroscience tells us that we get what we focus on, not what we want. So be sure you focus on the right thing. This is simply a way to do two things, get grounded and centered and focus on what's next. Now, you'll need a map for a what's next, but this is about the immediate grounding and centering. So let's look now at the who, what, where, when, and how of writing. Who? Who is it you write for? Your most authentic answer is yourself. When you speak in writing, you do so to an intended audience. Who's your audience? If you can identify specifically the audience you're going to address, the more specifically you envision the reader, the more specifically and meaningfully you will be able to speak. John Updike said, "I write to the person a little to the left and below the center of Kansas." One strategy is to envision a persona, a characterization of the ideal reader. Develop that persona fully. Who that person is, location, age, occupation, material and family status. By the time you've developed two or three ideal personas of the intended audience, you have an idea who you're speaking to. Your conversations can come alive as you talk to them. Make it easy to connect, create a conversation, a community. It's very easy for me to do that now, especially because I'm speaking to a group of coaches I'm training or that I'm working with individually in Mentor Coach. There's always an audience who might be interested in what you have to say that you can talk it into existence. The what. Now, you'll have to respect the marketplace. That's what we're going to do in the business seminar. Be attuned to needs. Provide answers. Make your approaches to answers accessible. Be attuned to what someone else wants and needs. Beyond that, you have to be true to your own story. Who you are is your gift to the readers. And writing is not a special language. It's not a gift you were born with. Writing is thinking on paper. Anyone who thinks clearly should be able to write clearly. Now, here's a what exercise. To sit down and think about your idea before you begin to write about it. How will you move from a vague notion to a rich three-dimensional book? Think about what you'll write along these lines. What do you want to communicate? What form should your book take? What chapters should be there? What should go into each chapter? What will you draw from your experiences to enhance the book? What research will you do to deepen its quality? Now, you're not in the business of finding readers for your words. You're in the business of finding words for your readers. This is the process that writers don't usually report. You don't usually see the thinking part, the preparation. Writers may, in an interview, say that their book just comes out or just came to them. It does not happen in that way. John David Mann gets up at 5 o'clock every morning. A good buddy of mine who's done multiple bestsellers, Janine Roth, told me when she was a guest of mine in a mastermind group, she said, you know, I've never really said this to anyone, but I go through a minimum of 30 edits before I really let anyone, especially my agent, see it. So writing is a creative process, but it's also work. The only thing harder than writing is rewriting. The where. Decide where you'll write. Virginia Woolf emphasized the importance of having a room of one's own. Get your space ready. Protect it from intrusions and noise, from emails or computers or a tablet pinging or notifying you. Nothing that interferes for the time you've allocated. Protect it from intrusion. Put one or two things in there that will represent your commitment to writing, perhaps. During the time that you commit to write, protect that space and time from intrusion. Unplug your telephone. Your answering service or voicemail will take care of that. There are few true emergencies in life. Talking to your buddy about what happened in the last installment of the series you're watching is not one of them, at least during your writing time. Guard your writing time so that you can be fully immersed. Protect your time because you have to pay for every yes with at least one no. When? Make an appointment with yourself. Choose a schedule for writing that you'll be loyal to no matter what. Everyone on earth has one thing in common. Our choices in life define us. Those who provide service to others, such as authors, money managers, therapists, leaders, teachers, coaches, especially parents, have their answers counted many times. What will yours be? Make it matter. Determine when you'll write. When I had a full psychoanalytic practice and teaching, I saw a dozen people each day, in addition to teaching and supervising, people would ask me when I found time to write. And my answer was always a gentle way to help them understand how I saw it, that I never found time to write. I created time. I grew up on a farm and ranch and got up every day before the sun to feed cattle. So rising early was a natural for me. It also happens to fit my biorhythms about my most creative time. So during all my years of parenting, I still got up early on Saturday and Sunday morning, so I had at least 2 or 3 hours to write before my two children woke up. By then, I was fully ready to turn off my recorder, roll on the floor with them, or play outside the rest of the day. Again later, during their adolescence, I could be totally available to them in order to be rendered totally insignificant, but it was still important that I was there. Decide what time of the day you write best. Your biorhythms. Think about when you're most creative. Consider what may be a natural time to write, when you have the most inclination then, also for a very different part of your brain and function, things like editing, writing and editing, two different states of mind, not to be combined. Decide when to do each. Here's my best piece of advice to you. Just start writing. Start simple. Start slow. Start now. After the seminar. Perhaps the most literate answer to the when question was offered over 900 years ago by Rashi, the great Torah commentator, who said, whatever you can do or dream you can do, begin it. So here are a couple of thoughts about how. Recognize your natural style of writing. Are you visual, auditory, or kinesthetic? Respect that style as you write. Some of you will do best visually, like at a keyboard, seeing the words appear on the screen. If you're primarily an auditory person, a dictation device may be the answer, especially if you're a talker. Everything I've written, including complex emails, is talking them, having them recorded. I envision a person or audience that I speak to. It's natural for me because that's the way I spend my day, talking to people. Either I did it in therapy or analysis, now I do it in coaching or teaching. I no longer use a secretary to describe dictation. That went out the door about a decade and a half ago when I moved to coaching. So when I use, for that, I use idictate.com. I upload from my little dictation device, and they send it back as a completed transcript for a penny and a half a word. So consider your work and performance styles. Those elements aren't talked about as much. There's an article on my website under the article section called Toward Brain Hardware Optimization that might be just a brief addition to this. One suggestion, whenever you have an idea, if it doesn't come during your specified writing time, write it down, capture it, get it into some form, written or typed. Research on memory tells us that a new idea or fact lasts an average of about 40 seconds in short-term memory, and unless you write it down to review, after that it's gone. You've probably had the experience. You think of a great phrase, a really catchy way to say something, and think, I'll always remember that. And later comes when you're going to remember it, and you don't. I always have, and you will hear more about me than you ever want to know, I always have a little moleskin journal, the little thin ones, in my cargo shorts or pants with a pen in case anything ever occurs to me. One principle we know from coaching, when people are asked what they intend to do, they're more likely to do it according to how they answer. When you ask people before an election if they intend to vote, it increases the probability of their going to vote by 25%. In a study of 40,000 subjects, the question was, do you intend to buy a new car? Being asked that question increased the purchase rates in the next 3 months of the groups that say yes by 35%. Another factor that increases the likelihood of desirable behavior is asking people what they intend to eat, certain foods or diet or exercise. When we do that, if you ever do it in coaching, someone is more likely to live into what they've stated because they want to keep that identity that they've put out there. They want to be loyal to it. So that becomes, in a way, part of an addendum to their values, their ideal. So your commitment to yourself now, write down your who, what, where, when, and how. Specifically address your intention and plan. Make an appointment with yourself and keep it with the same loyalty that you do an appointment with your client, your doctor, dentist, or accountant. Writing doesn't come about through inspiration. It happens when you decide to sit down and write. Clarissa Pinkola Estes said, to be ourselves causes us to be exiled by many others, and yet to comply with what others want causes us to be exiled from ourselves. Now, just a word about creativity. There's a natural innate energy inside each of us to create. When we open ourselves to the possibilities and creativity, we allow our internal experience to flow through whatever channels are natural, words, pictures, movement. Creativity is a natural part of life. So, as you begin the process of your book, don't compare your inside with somebody else's outside. Somebody else's outside may be a complete book. And when you pick up the book to read it, it'll seem daunting. That author did not begin with that complete book. He or she began with an idea, crafted a few lines, and reworked it again and again. A great idea of thinking and a great deal of reading are required to write a book. Writers, in discussing their books after they're published, often omit or minimize the amount of work that went into the completion of the book. We call that a nostalgia bias. Nostalgia is remembering not as it was, but as better than it was. Airbrushed memories set on an idealized stage. When we compare our inside, our hoped-for book, with their outside, a completed published book, we may not take into account the true scope of the work. And again, no one ever sits down to write a book. You sit down to write a few sentences. You sit down for an hour at your desk and stay there at the time you've decided to commit to writing, just in case some random string of words occur to you or some expression that you create or need to capture. It's a system. If you sit down each day for 1 hour at your desk, you do it no matter what. I mean, other than family emergency. Some writers set a word quota for the day. 250 words is a full double-spaced page. So I want to conclude with 10 caveats for writers. The most important thing about a plan is having one. The second most important thing about a plan is sticking to it. Secondly, write every day. It'll help you think like a writer. Three, read every day. It will help you think like a writer communicating to a reader. Four, write in a voice that sounds like you. We're going to talk about voice in a later seminar and how important that is. Writing is not a contest. It's a transaction between two people, you and the reader. So sound like yourself and be yourself. If you don't say indeed, then don't write it. If you don't say one would think, then don't write it. Make it sound like you're talking. This is how it also is helpful for me to avoid somewhat being convoluted by talking it and talking to someone else and just capturing it with hitting the record button. Five, use language simply and warmly. You'll be able to make any subject clear by reducing it to good English. A clear, simple sentence is no accident. How you write will be how you are perceived. Your writing may be your only way to introduce yourself to someone whose business, trust, affection, or money is what you want. Keep the burden of clarity. Writing is about creating meaning. Rewriting is about crafting meaning to make it optimally useful and accessible for the reader. Plan from the beginning to keep the burden of the clarity of communication yourself. Don't shift it to the reader or listener. In this way, you maintain ownership of responsibility to your reader. Eight, have the end in mind from the beginning. In the film The Lookout, Lewis, a blind man, helps his mentally challenged roommate make sense of things by thinking of his day as a story. Lewis said, start at the end. Can't tell a story if you don't know where it's going. Nine, take some positive action toward your goal every day, even if it's just one. At the end of the month, you'll have 30 completed actions. If you write just two paragraphs a day, you'll have 60 paragraphs. And that's a bunch. That's a West Texas literary term, a bunch. 10, decide what you want. Believe it's possible. A belief is a filter between reality and our perception. A belief is the mind's command to the brain, the software program that determines our behavior. We now know that beliefs can actually turn genes on or turn them off. So highlight this equation in your outline, because it may be helpful for you now with your writing. It may be helpful in working with clients. Beliefs drive behavior. Behavior drives performance. You can change your life by changing your beliefs. If there's something about your performance that's not working, then look at the antecedent, the behavior that may be understood and tweaked for a better performance. If the behavior isn't what you want, then look at that antecedent, the belief, and look at the belief so that you can have the belief, the behavior, and the performance that you want, that you determine, that's not determined by any old script, but what you craft and create each moment. You can change your life by changing your beliefs, and our possibilities are only limited to the ones we allow ourselves to see. Now, here's a true story that I want to end with. A destitute young housewife had almost no money. She couldn't afford a babysitter or a computer, but she had a story to tell, and she was determined to do it. She decided to write. When she first thought of what she wanted to write about, she was on a train, and she didn't have a pen. She was too shy to ask someone to borrow a pen, so she forgot some of her initial ideas. As soon then as she started writing, her mother died at age 45 from multiple sclerosis. Her marriage to an abusive husband ended in a divorce. Shortly after that, she had a miscarriage before she actually had another child, a baby. After that, she got fired from her job and lived on government welfare. She took her baby, after she was fired, to a coffee shop in the middle of the afternoon and wrote on a legal pad while her baby napped. She did this every day for 4 years. And then, after much work, she finally found a publisher for Harry Potter. And her last Potter book sold 11 million copies in the first hour. It's the record for all of history for a writer. She became the first billionaire author. So, here's an exercise I'd like to challenge you with to do in the next 24 hours. Not just, notice I said, not before our next class. Yeah, that's kind of abstract. Well, you know, Friday, Monday, Sunday, all of that work. Here's in the next 24 hours, which means tomorrow by this time. I'd recommend that you sketch two things, and I don't want to hear your voice saying, I can't really draw, I'm not a sketch, that's not my, sketch two things. However it looks, it's the idea of capturing it. Sketch two things. One, the cover of your book, the title, the subtitle, and your name. Now, we're going to back into how to do titles and subtitles and that sort of thing, but right now, capture it. Second, sketch that book on a shelf at an actual glass and brick and mortar bookstore, a Barnes & Noble, or a local independent bookstore, or on a table at the back of the room where you present, but a sketch of that book in its space where it's going to be, where people are going to see it. So do those two sketches. And I'm not talking about anything elaborate or a piece of art. I'm talking about capturing an image of the cover of your book, title, subtitle, your name, and a sketch of that book in a context where you can see and envision how it might be introduced to people, how someone else is going to see that. So hold on. I'm going to get us on discussion mode, so manage your background noise, either a star six mute or mute button, until you're ready to talk. Okay, we're in discussion mode. I'm interested to hear from you. Are there thoughts or questions or clarifications about what we've talked about? And then I'm interested in other aspects that of where you'd like to go with it. But first, clarifications about anything that we talked about that might be helpful to you at this point.
I've got a question. Can you hear me?
Yes, this is
Christine Quinn.
Yeah, please go ahead.
So I have a question about the 10 caveats, number 4, writing in a voice that sounds like you.
Yes.
My question is, when I look at, like, the Harry Potter author and Demon Copper, I always confuse that name. I find that so creative that the author is writing from a voice that's not them. I mean, it is them, but it's not them. Do you know what I mean?
What we're talking about is writing a nonfiction book. We're not talking about novels or fantasy or all of that. But you're communicating with people in real time around a subject that you want to help them and engage in a collaboration with them to get from where they are to a better place necessarily, or any kind of nonfiction book. And that's the kind of the preface and the premise of what we're talking about. It is not about writing novels. It's about writing a nonfiction book. So does that fit with your expectation of the course? Was that clear enough?
It's okay, not really. I mean, I'm actually I'm interested in nonfiction, but I'm interested perhaps down the road.
Okay.
Weaving in fiction that relates to my life.
Sure.
If that makes sense.
Well,
yeah.
If that allows you to hang in and continue on this call and come back for the next 3, that's great, because I think it'll be helpful for what you're going to do, and it's a place to start. It's much more experience near, and it's very much like what we do in mentor coaching, is to work with people from with where they are and create a collaborative framework to go someplace new together.
Yeah.
So 100%. Of the how-to and the structure and the system and all that. But these are just some ideas about the art of writing. And everything I've talked about is, you know, to say this in a too simple way, this is the right brain seminar. Everything else we'll be talking about combined and planning and that sort of thing to really create a book.
Got it.
So great question, though. And that's...
Thank you.
That's something I didn't really realize needed to be clarified, but you just...
No, it's okay. I'm in for the nonfiction, but like
okay.
I said, I'm also very, maybe it's an admiration of authors who are able to weave in part of their lives in a fictional character.
Uh-huh.
That's not them, you know, it's a woman writing a man character,
yeah.
Or boy character. So anyway, no, I'm in for the nonfiction. But I just, thanks for clarifying that. Thank you.
Okay, and thank you for that. This is about really how you connect with and create a conversation with your reader and readers and create a community of that. So it's a really good question. Other thoughts or questions or clarifications that anyone has?
Hi, David. It's Danny Bedoni. How are you all?
Hey, welcome.
Happy
New Year
as well.
Yeah.
So, question. So, when you're writing, shall one start doing the outline of chapters, or just start talking and writing the paragraphs, and then from there, the chapters come? What comes first? Just talking about it, or doing the outline and the chapters?
Well, what comes first is having a structure to sit down and do it. And then I'm not being facetious, but and the next thing is to have an idea of where you're going to go. If you don't know where you're going, any map will do. So if you sit down to write a blog, you may want to write a sentence about what you want to convey in the blog, how you can organize that, a theme. It doesn't have to be for anybody else to see, but it's an organizer for what you do because you're going to build and develop that. Now, we'll talk about, in the craft of writing, you'll see in that outline and in the workbook, there's a book outline. That's really important. Even if you don't do work with a traditional publisher and an agent, and I'll talk about in the business writing, there are 8 or 9 other ways to go about it. Still, that book proposal, the idea of including for each chapter, a chapter title, doesn't have to be perfect or what you're going to end with, but what your idea is, and then how you're going to have the chapters that develop that, and then ultimately what you're going to include in each of those chapters. And now, this is for nobody else's eyes but for yours, but that's your map. So you know where you are, where you're going, and you can measure progress along the way. Now, you may change everything about that, but at least it's going to organize your thinking about that. And there are a couple of references that I have of a couple of books that are really good for creating a book proposal, even if you're not going to use a traditional publisher, but it's a way of organizing what you're going to write about and how you're going to go about marketing, because you're going to have to do that whatever you do. If you're interested at some point later, I don't want to inundate you with a whole bunch of stuff, because I have something in mind I'm going to send you that is about the brain science of story that I'll send you. But I'll be happy to send you what today actually was just finalized with my agent, a book proposal for my next book. And I'll be happy to share that so that you can get an idea of one way, at least, of think of a pretty traditional way that agents do it, because they know and publishers know that you're gonna be primarily in charge of selling your book. Because the first question an agent will ask you if you go this route is, what's your platform? How many people follow you who are likely to buy your book? Because that's the first question the publisher asks that agent. What's his or her platform? So it's just a way to think about it, but it's a way of creating a map that includes a number of things. So the first thing would be to create a map. Same that you do with each client, with each coaching session, you create that story by asking a client where they want to get to, what they want to focus on, and where they want to get to. And then you develop the story, the beginning, the middle, and the end, the challenge, the development, the resolution. Same 3 components of any story, including that coaching story. And then you ask them at the end if they would summarize in a sentence what they're taking away and what they commit to, so they have an action plan to apply that. I know we're over, and I want to respect that. Respond if you have a moment to the email about the questions of, you know, what you would most like us to focus on and what you'd most like to take away. We'll pick up right here next time. Thank you very much for your enthusiasm, and especially for those of you who have already sent an email response. It will help me get a better idea of what will be most helpful for you. I look forward to picking up right here next time. Thanks very, very much. See you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, David.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
This will be posted at the site.
Thank you.
Reporting. See you guys.
Bye. Good.